This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The day before her children died, Lindsay Clancy had a psychiatric appointment. It was virtual. It lasted approximately 17 minutes. And according to the malpractice lawsuit she filed in January 2026, the doctor increased her antidepressant dose. That was it. That was the last thing the medical system did before January 24th of 2023. 17 minutes on a video screen. Dosage adjusted, door closed. And then in fewer than 24 hours, a voice allegedly told Lindsay Clancy it was her last chance. And she said, "Go to God, baby," to her children. And three people under the age of five were dead. Sit with that number for a moment. 17 minutes. That's allegedly the amount of time a licensed medical professional spent with a woman who, according to her subsequent civil complaint, had been experiencing auditory hallucinations for weeks, who had been admitted to two separate hospital programs in the previous 5 weeks, who had been prescribed by her own defense attorneys, count 13 different psychiatric medications in roughly 4 months, whose husband had told a close friend a full month before the killings that the medications simply weren't working, that he believed his wife had become addicted to benzodiazepines, that the withdrawals were horrifying, and the side effects were the worst possible. 17 minutes, video screen, dosage adjusted. And then she went home, where she already was at home. There's a lot to get through in this case. Your thoughts are extremely welcome in the comment section on Substack and YouTube, especially if you've been in this world, are in this world, do med checks, things of that nature. 17 minutes, you know, when I first read that, I'm like, yeah, that's about what I do. But I also don't have that history. I don't have a immediate history of being hospitalized, of going through 14 different medications in the previous 4 months, which is insane. Your body can't do that. Your brain can't do that. You want a recipe to make someone into a killer? Do that to them. Give them 14 different medications that are going to affect the brain in different ways each. Pull them off, add them in, change the dosage, do the hokey pokey, and turn yourself around. And that's what Lindsay Clancy ended up being all about. It's hard to hold someone responsible when their brain chemistry is actively being effed with by the people who are supposed to understand it and manage it effectively and safely. Again, your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we work our way through this one. Oh, yeah, and postpartum is all in the mix. So her body's already screwing with her. And then let's add a bunch of drugs. And I'm not saying that drugs are bad. When used correctly, when managed correctly, when handled correctly, they can be a lifesaver. But when you're treating them like the candy counter at Woolworth's in 1985, here, I'll have some of this, a little bit of that, give me some of these, and more of this. I'm going to mix them all together and make what I call a candy salad, except in this case, a cocktail of death. To understand how we arrived at that appointment, you have to trace the full chain of alleged failure, because that is what this is. Not one bad doctor, not one missed call, a chain documented in civil lawsuits filed separately by both Lindsay and her husband, Patrick, in January of 26. Each link adding her to the next. Each provider allegedly operating without the full picture Nobody apparently talking to anybody else, communicating what's actually going on, you know, like you're supposed to. A woman in full psychiatric crisis being processed by a system that was supposedly built to catch exactly what was happening to her, and the system kept handling her discharge papers and sending her home. After Callan was born in May of 2022, Lindsay began seeing providers for what was presented as postpartum depression. She was prescribed Zoloft. According to her lawsuit, it made things worse. More anxious, less able to sleep, more activated and frantic than before. She said so. She went back and said so again. More medications were added, and then more Prozac, Remeron, Ambien, Klonopin, Seroquel, Lamictal, Ativan, Trazodone. I think I got most of those names right. The list kept growing in a way that alarmed everyone paying attention. Patrick was telling close friends the situation was bad, and he believed Lindsay had become addicted to benzodiazepines. That the withdrawals were the worst she had ever experienced, that the side effects were the worst possible. And he was saying all of this to people who knew them out loud while Lindsay kept going to appointments and kept describing exactly what was happening to her body and her mind with the clinical precision of a trained nurse. She knew the vocabulary. She used it. She showed up and said exactly what was wrong in language that should have been unmistakable to anyone qualified to hear it. Then came December 21st, 2022. Lindsay did something that should have triggered a complete reassessment of her care. She didn't wait for someone to notice. She walked herself into a day program at Women and Infants Hospital in Rhode Island, drove herself to an intake desk and said exactly what was happening. She told the staff she was crazy depressed, numb to all emotion, and can't feel love. Those were her words, not hedge, not minimize, specific, clinical, honest, testing confirmed. She was the most severe levels for both depression and anxiety. The numbers were not ambiguous. By any objective measure, the picture in front of that examining physician was of a woman in serious crisis. And the doctor who examined her concluded, no postpartum depression, bipolar disorder ruled out. According to her malpractice lawsuit, that conclusion was allegedly reached without obtaining an adequate patient history. The day program determined it wasn't the right fit for Lindsay and discharged her. The hospital reportedly tried to contact her prescribing nurse practitioner to discuss the case. Per the lawsuit, they never got a response, so Lindsay left. She went back to Duxbury, back to three children under five who needed a mother who was present and functional, back to a prescription list that everyone around her agreed was not working. That assessment, the no PPD finding from Women and Infants, has since become one of the prosecution's most significant pieces of evidence. The Plymouth County District Attorney's Office has pointed to it as proof that Lindsay was not mentally impaired on January 24th. They're taking a conclusion drawn under inadequate circumstances and treating it as a definitive bill of mental health. Her defense attorneys call it a misread, built on incomplete information, a wrong answer that prosecutors have elevated into a cornerstone of their entire case. The defense will spend considerable time at trial dismantling it. That fight will be one of the defining exchanges in the entire proceeding. 10 days after that Rhode Island discharge, New Year's Eve 2022, Lindsay admitted herself to the McLean Hospital. If you know anything about American psychiatric care, McLean needs no introductions. Harvard-affiliated, one of the most well-regarded psychiatric institutions in the country. A place with resources and expertise and reputation that most mental health facilities spend careers trying to approach. Lindsay was placed in a locked unit. She reported depression and thoughts of ending her life. She reportedly did not see a doctor for 3 days after admission. When she finally did, the doctor advised her to stop taking Seroquel and the benzodiazepines, prescribed an antidepressant for sleep, and discharged her 5 days after she arrived. Yay, isn't our mental health system lovely here? 5 days at one of the most respected psychiatric hospitals in the world, then out the door. 11 days after the discharge, January 16, 2023, the hallucinations returned with a specificity and urgency that should remove any ambiguity about where Lindsay's mind was in the final days before the killings. Not vague dread, not the blurred unreality of severe depression. According to her civil complaint, a voice told her clearly, "You will never be the same. The only option is to die." This is a woman in what her legal team argues was active psychosis 2 weeks before her children died. And she was still calling, still scheduling appointments, still trying in whatever state her mind was in at that point to get someone in the medical system to do something different than what they had been doing. Begging for help. This is more than slipping through the cracks, folks. This is a system that is built with gaping holes designed for people to fall into. And hopefully nobody raises an alarm about it. Hopefully nobody cares enough to raise an alarm. And we just keep going along our merry way. The American psychiatric system, it's so lovely. And look, there's wonderful doctors out there, and there's drugs that do work, and there's great hospitals, and there are certainly good people in it. But we have such a structure where unless you have the access and the cash to get there and be there, you typically get these lower level systems. But look at this. Look at this. One of the most respected ones in the country, and this is how it was handled. It really is rolling the dice every time you enter that system, your mental health. What are they going to do? I'll tell you what. It's Tony's story time. You should have like a little jingle here or something. Tony's story time. Anytime I've ever dealt with the mental health system in our country, and I've done it a few times, not for myself, but for someone I cared about at that moment, I've had to admit two people, and it was not voluntarily. It was after extreme behavior on both parts where they became a danger to themselves and others. And I'll tell you what the number one priority was of each of those locations, both very different, both in different states. How are you going to pay us? Yeah, they should be in here for about 7 days, but let's see what their insurance covers. Can you pay us up front? If you pay us up front, we'll give you a really good deal. And suddenly it turns into like bartering for furniture in 1988 at Larry's couch house of comfort or something. I mean, it really feels like that. It's not even like to the level of like car dealership where there might be financing. I mean, it's like dealing with shady furniture stores in 1988. You really like that Lazy Boy, don't you? Man, she's a beaut. Tell you what, I'll give you $50 off if you can pay right now in cash. Right now. Well, I mean, it's fifth. I don't really care. The money's not a big deal. I'll tell you what. $100 off of your pay right now. Again, the money's not a big deal to me. I can afford it, whatever the hell it is. Let's just run this through insurance and we'll figure it out. And what it is what it is. Even better, I tell you right now, half off. You just take those dollar bills, those dollar bills out of your wallet. And you'll get 7 days. And I'll tell you what, we're going to throw in a free food dehydrator. Okay, they didn't offer a food dehydrator. But I'm telling you, that is pretty much how it went in both cases. You pay in cash, you'll get guaranteed care right now. This is my experience. is two experiences. You pay in cash right now, we're going to give you the full treatment. You let it run through insurance, we have to wait and wonder. We might discharge them early. We're not going to say it's because of the cash or the insurance company taking time, but we're going to say they're great. But amazingly, if the cash is there immediately, we're not. We're going to be like, well, you can stay longer. It all comes down to this in so many cases, in so many places. Beware, oh fellow travelers of the world and life. Because it's if you don't have any experience in that world, which most people don't until you're there. And they're like, it literally becomes like bartering at a car lot over mental health and care and treatment. It's fucked up. I had the same thing too when I had my daughter. If you pay us in cash right now, we'll give you a big discount. I'm like, what? Let me just run this through insurance. Let me get back. Well, tell you what. When you're in the least competent place to discuss this, we're going to throw these options in front of you, but you got to decide right now. It's fucked. And you bring these stories up to people who've never been in the system. I think it works lovely. I went in and had a hangnail removed last week and I didn't have any problems. Yeah. She reportedly searched "what is a psychopath" on her phone in this period. Not because she was planning anything sinister per her attorneys, but because she was terrified about what was happening to her mind and desperately trying to understand and get a grip on what was going on around her as her mind slowly deteriorated. As she's screaming for help, going to all the right places, asking for it, getting effed around everywhere she goes. A labor and delivery nurse. A woman who had spent her professional life understanding the psychology of new parenthood. Who had clinical training and medical vocabulary and full awareness of what a mental health crisis looks like. Searching the internet in private for a word that might explain the experience she was living inside. Looking for a door back to herself. That detail is not a piece of the prosecution evidence. That detail is a window into what it looked like to be terrified of your own mind while the system around you keeps sending you home. She met with her psychiatrist multiple times in the weeks after the McLean discharge. Every appointment was reportedly virtual. Every one lasted about 17 minutes. Each time the appointment ended, the video screen went dark and Lindsay went back to the house on Summer Street, back to three children who needed a mother to be present, back to a husband who was watching what was happening and saying out loud to everyone around him that it was not going well. Back to prescription lists and 13 medications with nothing to show for it but a worsening condition and a narrowing window of time before something irreversible happened. The day before the irreversible happened, one final appointment, virtual, 17 minutes, antidepressant dose increased, door closed. When the civil suits landed in January 26, Lindsay's malpractice case and Patrick's wrongful death suit filed separately but aimed at the same alleged chain of failures, that combined picture was of a system that had failed at every point where coordination was possible and legally required. Multiple providers allegedly prescribing medications without ever consulting each other about what the other was prescribing. No testing conducted to understand why Lindsay was reacting so severely to what she had been given. No effort, per the lawsuits, to involve Patrick and the family in her care, despite a husband who is actively and specifically raising alarms about her condition. Appointments so brief and so remote that a patient in full psychiatric crisis could not have been fully assessed in a time and format available. And underneath all of it, a woman who was the primary caregiver to three children under five, who was reporting that she could not function on a daily basis, who was telling every provider she saw that something was catastrophically wrong, and who kept being handed discharge papers and sent back to that house. Lindsay's civil complaint describes her care across those months as a disorganized, uncoordinated course of polypharmacy. Her attorneys write plainly, Lindsay Clancy did everything a mother in her situation could do. Her husband advocated for her. Her family drove from out of state to help care for her children. And still, the medical system failed her completely. A Columbia University psychiatry professor's expert analysis cited in the lawsuit reportedly concluded that Lindsay had an underlying bipolar disorder with roots traceable to after her second child's birth, a condition that was allegedly never correctly identified or named in all the months she was being treated, which means the medications she received were aimed at a diagnosis that may never have been fully accurate, which means the interventions were built on a foundation that was wrong from the start. The providers named in both lawsuits have declined to comment on the pending litigation and have affirmed their commitment to excellent care. The prosecution disputes this analysis entirely and stands behind the women and infants assessment as sound clinical judgment. The trial will be, as Reddington himself has described it, a battle of the experts. But here's the reality that sits beneath every argument that is coming, beneath every expert who will take the stand, beneath every motion filed and every ruling handled down. Postpartum psychosis occurs in one to two out of every thousand births. It has been documented in medical literature since the time going back centuries, 4th century BC. It carries a recognized and documented risk of both suicide and infanticide. It strikes at the same rate as Down syndrome. It strikes at the same rate as cerebral palsy. And it's not listed as a standalone diagnosis in the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, which is the foundational reference text of psychiatric practice in this country, which means clinicians are not systematically trained to identify it, which means insurance systems don't have clean pathways for coding it, which means hospitals don't have standard protocols for catching it before something catastrophic occurs, which means the gap is not in one doctor's training or in one hospital's resources. It is in the architecture of the entire system. Why do we keep having cases like that? Because the system is broken. I believe there are good doctors at all these places. I believe there is good intentions at these places. Nobody is sitting there going, how can we make her crazy so she kills her children? No. But when the instruction manual literally is for the wrong thing, you're going to have some that can figure out what to do. I mean, think of it. I mean, people are different when it comes to instruction manuals, if you will. And if your DSM is your instruction manual that everything else is built on, and this is not identified as effectively as it needs to be and how it should be, you're going to have screw-ups. So that does give the system a bit of grace in the civil lawsuits. Does it fix the problem? No. Does it hold everyone accountable to the level they should be? Probably not. Should they be liable? That's for a jury and a court to decide. If it does one thing, if anything at all, let's hope to God it raises more than just awareness. And it actually pulls a lever somewhere that make these systems adjust and change so they can be more effective to the next Lindsay Clancy that comes down the line. Because they're coming down the line every day. And either we fix the system or we're going to keep getting more stories like this. We've already have had, there's gazillions of stories like this. And everybody's shocked. How could a mother do that? How could? Because their brains are broken at that moment in time and they need help. That's how. So you can either shame the sick, or we can figure out a better way to deal with this. Lindsay Clancy walked through every door the system made available to her. She used clinical language to describe her symptoms because she was a clinician. She had a husband raising alarms, family driving in from out of state, and every resource and every advantage a patient in psychiatric crisis could possibly bring to the table. And the machine saw her, recorded every appointment, generated every discharge summary, processed her with complete administrative efficiency, and still never saw her clearly enough to stop what was coming. The machine didn't miss her because nobody was paying attention. It missed her because it was never fully designed to catch what was happening. And that distinction is the difference between a tragedy and an indictment. 17 minutes, dosage increased, door closed, and then she went home. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube, your experiences if you've been there as well. And if you or someone you know is experiencing postpartum mental health challenges, the National Maternal Mental Health Hotline offers 24/7 support. Call or text toll-free 833-943-5746. That's 833-943-5746. We'll continue our conversation in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. The links are in the description. I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.